From a quarantine studio brought to you by KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Amid the calls for social distancing and quarantines around the U.S. and world, one population whose well-being seems to be falling at the bottom of the priority list is those who are in custody, in detention centers, in prisons and jails. On Monday in California, the first documented infection of a prisoner was announced. In New York City, jails have reported 38 infections of the coronavirus. Mayor Bill de Blasio has so far authorized the release of 4 dozen people from Rikers Island, but so far many worry the pace is too slow. Black and brown communities are disproportionately overrepresented in U.S. prisons and jails. My guest is Noelle Hanrahan. She's the director of Prison Radio. Welcome to the program, Noelle.
Thank you for having me.
So first, as far as you know, have the social distancing measures even been raised in prisons and jails around the country? I imagine that it's a huge patchwork depending upon which system, which part of which state we're talking about. But if there's a shortage of hand sanitizers in the general public, I can't imagine that the prison population or the jail population is having any access, right?
Prison Radio talks to prisoners every day. So we have 47 correspondents around the country. We're hearing from the few that we've talked to in the last few days that they are getting information over their closed circuit TVs and from their unit managers and from the Department of Corrections, but they're not getting access that's meaningful. It's impossible to have a situation where there is enough distance between prisoners because of the massive overcrowding, because the U.S. Supreme Court has says that double celling is okay, and because of the nature of prisons. Also, in terms of what they have access to, they're getting some masks, but those masks are insufficient. The hand sanitizers, and at least in Pennsylvania, I talked to an inmate this morning, are in a cupboard, and they don't have access to additional soap. It's very difficult to get hygiene products in normal times in prison because you have to pay for them at the commissary. So he's saying it's very difficult. We have a report that in Pennsylvania, for the 47,000 inmates who are held in this close, tight sections of prisons, there is one medical facility that has 4 ventilators.
Wow.
So they're going to be dealing with people who are at extreme risk. And we also have populations in these prisons who are older and have medical conditions. So it's a complete toxic, ripe firestorm that is about to happen. And like I was saying in our communications with our constituents, there are really no walls. There are really no barriers. The virus is not going to respect a prison wall. People come in and out. The guards come in and out. Who's vulnerable? The prison guards, the prisoners' communities, and the communities that the guards go back to. If this isn't dealt with efficiently and effectively and immediately, this is going to put the United States, every single state, every single facility that houses people in these conditions is going to suffer exponential epidemic. And they really need to look at it that way. Immediately, absolutely immediately. No trickling 2 dozen people released in New York. They need to release every single person in pretrial detention who is eligible for bail. If they can't make the bail, they have to release them because they said that if they could make the bail, they were not a danger to the community. They have to release them immediately. Everyone who has a release date in 2020 and 2021, who's going to be released into the community very soon, they need to be released immediately. They have to get down to single celling and they have to absolutely release those who are elderly with pre-existing conditions. So we are at great risk. We are also now at great risk with the guards and the guards' families. This is the one issue I have ever really thought that I was going to totally agree with the Pennsylvania State Guards Association, and every single guards union in the country should be immediately calling for this because our lives and their lives are at stake.
Now, of course, the United States has one of the largest prison populations in the world, which sets us apart because this is a global crisis. In recent weeks, we've heard about riots happening in prisons in Brazil, in Colombia. There was just news of a riot because prisoners are terrified that they're being forgotten and they're, while the rest of society is being quarantined and encouraged to distance themselves with one another, they're shoved into these close quarters. We could see riots here in the U.S., and who can blame inmates for rioting in such a situation, right?
The prisoners that I've spoken with now are the ones who are the leaders in different communities, and they are being responsible and clear. I haven't heard any panic. And we've dealt with these situations. Now, this isn't a scale that is going to be unheard of. Prisoners are dying in isolation inside prisons throughout the country all the time, and there are not riots. Mumia Abu-Jamal was for a year and a half in a infirmary, which was in isolation, and he watched elders die. So this is already taking place. There's a community of people inside. Every prison's a community. There are a community of hospice workers who are prisoners who are there. It's a caring, loving community. So I think that to say that their prisoners are going to riot is not exactly accurate here right now. But I do believe that our common humanity, the guards, the prisoners, and the communities in which the guards live, really make it extremely important that this action happens now and that the light bulb goes on.
So you mentioned Pennsylvania. What about California, which has a huge prison population? I mentioned that on Monday, the first inmate in California prison systems was tested positive for coronavirus. Has the governor of California, have local mayors, city mayors, taken any steps to try to push for the release of people in state prisons as well as those in county jails?
I've seen local authorities. I've seen Alameda County. I've seen Los Angeles County. I've seen jail facilities and sheriffs take action. I've seen Gavin Newsom say he wants to take some action, but there's a level of action that needs to be taken that is much more dramatic than they're taking. Like they're releasing a couple hundred. That's not going to cut it. It really has to be, what is the single cell number, or what are these groups of people that we can release, like vast groups of people, because the overcrowding, California is at 137% right now.
Wow.
I mean, crowding, and that's with double selling, that's probably triple selling. So people really need to understand that there wasn't a reason. When you've seen the movie 13th, when you've seen and you've read The New Jim Crow, many of your listeners understand that there have been a warehousing of hundreds of thousands of people that has been unethical, immoral, and illegal. There has been this creation of a carceral state. We have 2 million people in prison, 2 million people in prison. That is more than any other developed country on earth, any developed country on earth. Therefore, that has been immoral, illegal, and unnecessary. And we need to undo that right now because all of our lives are at stake. So yes, we knew it. We were calling for it. We all know it's true that anybody in there for a nonviolent crime needs to get out.
Right. And so that actually leads me to my next question, which is, are there some practical steps to immediately take to release nonviolent prisoners, which would leave enough room in existing prisons for those who might be convicted of violent felonies to socially distance and to be, you know, to prevent the spread of disease? Because, of course, the public would be leery of all prisoners being released.
The public shouldn't be leery of 80% of the prisoners being released. That has been a fiction created by our culture. But besides that, there are measures that can be taken. You know, when we see things happen that just happen, you notice them. So a judge in Philadelphia released a death row inmate on Saturday. Mm-hmm. He has a petition of innocence before the court. The DA has said he's very likely innocent. She released him to a hospital on Saturday because he had symptoms of COVID-19. There was no court adjudication. The door opened. The same was true for Herman Wallace in Louisiana when he was getting out. Literally from one day to the next, that cell door was unlocked and opened. There are ways. Governors can do it. State legislatures can do it. There are going to be people held accountable. And there are some very good articles now being put out about the list. It's a short list. The mayors, the governors, the judges on the state level, and the legislatures. And they need to act immediately because the epidemic that we may be able to control in the next 2 weeks, the United States, all of us may be able to work with to dampen down, is going to be dramatically impacted if these focus centers, these locus of infection, are allowed to be overrun. And there is no way they're going to stop them. Prisoners who I talk with every day, I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of prisoners, are always deeply concerned about the sanitary conditions in prison. It's one of their deepest concerns. Always. They always talk about it. That's the reason why we have a hepatitis C epidemic inside prisons. We have a 2% in the population, and we have 20% epidemic of hep C in prisons. So there's a problem with sanitation in prisons. There's a problem with overcrowding. So we need to recognize this, recognize that there will not be a social cost when people are released, and just release them.
Noelle, the Trump administration seems to be taking the approach of putting the health of the economy over the health of the people. President Trump has been, you know, tweeting suggestively on Twitter that that workers be allowed to return to work after just a 15-day quarantine because the cure for the COVID-19 pandemic could be more destructive than the actual virus itself. And he's sort of, you know, there's a worry that he might be trying to take the approach that in early days, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson seemed to be taking, that Dutch leadership has tried to take as well, these right-wing authoritarian leaders who are basically suggesting, you know, let this thing run its course and those who die will die. Because, of course, it's those people who don't have access to healthcare, who already have compromised immune systems, who are in prisons, who are, you know, working class, people of color, all of those vulnerable members of society that include prison inmates, that society, the establishment in our society has already written off.
I think we're going to lose a lot of people. I do not think, you know, we don't hear from the government about reasonable expectations of the curve and what's going to happen. I think Trump is ill-equipped in this moment to intellectually understand what's happening and or to make a plan. So we are in a desperate situation where the people behind him very likely have some abilities, but you can't see them at the microphone. So I just think that at this moment, we have to build the world we want to live in, and we have to act locally. We have to act locally as much as possible. And in great part, that also deals with the prisons. We have to put pressure on people locally to do the right thing. I think there's a little bit of room there. There have been some minor victories, but given the scope, the scale of the pandemic, we need a much more robust response. And so I think we need to demand that that happens locally.
So tell me about what some of the advocacy groups, or what also family members of those incarcerated have been doing. I cannot imagine the fear of someone whose loved one is in prison right now, thinking about the much more increased risk of their infection, given the conditions you were mentioning about how they are so unsanitary and also the lack of ability to do social distancing. I imagine family members are extremely worried. Are they, you know, are there protests? Are there, you know, in as much as they can be in these times?
I think that people are very much taking action. And they have, I've seen this amazing group develop in Pennsylvania. So right now, one of the targets is the Allegheny County Jail. And if you go to the Abolitionist Law Center and the Amistad Law Project, they will show you things that people are doing. In New Jersey yesterday, we had people driving. They did a drive-by group gathering to protest ICE detention. ICE detention is another thing that just should be immediately. That's a federal level decision that could be made immediately. Empty ICE. Give everybody a ticket out. You know, everyone should be released from ICE detention. So I think that that's needs to be done immediately. And I think people can be really active. And I think people's families, the reason why the criminal justice system is dramatically changing and called into question, more so now than ever, is because of people's families and because they are organized and they are effective. So anywhere you live, you can find your people and you can start making change because it's happening.
Even if you can't get out and do drive-by protests, if you will, there are, of course, the old-fashioned ways in which to make one's voice heard, and that's picking up the phone and calling governor's offices, mayor's offices, the federal government with regard to the ICE detention centers, which we covered on our program last week, and all of those other ways that are still available, not to mention social media actions as well, right?
Correct. So you can be effective in this moment, and you can join a community. It can be done, so you should.
What are prison, going back to what you were saying earlier about the issue of prison guards being at risk, I imagine prison guard unions might be extremely concerned as well. Are they speaking out?
I have not heard them speaking out, but they should, because the interest of the state is not for their health. They have always been cannon fodder for the carceral state. And so I think that their interests are aligned at this moment with prisoners. And I think that they need to act aggressively because they are at risk. A New York State investigator who works in the prisons has already died. Other people have been testing positive. A lot of prison guards have been testing positive. So we are in a situation where their health is at great risk, and their family's health and their community's health is at great risk because they are coming in every single day to a place where the pandemic is going to explode.
And of course, this is a pandemic unlike so many others. It's an invisible killer. Of course, it's not a death sentence necessarily if you get it, but it's an invisible virus that can remain dormant before symptoms show up for up to 14 days, as per some reports, which is really shocking. So a whole prison population can be interacting with one another, spreading the disease around, and no one would know till the first symptoms started to arise. And that's terrifying. It could be happening right now. We mentioned how sanitary conditions of sanitization are, and just in general cleanliness is so poor within prisons because of lack of resources. But even the medical system there is poor, right? Doctors and nurses in the general population know they're going to have not enough masks, not enough equipment, not enough ventilators. And the healthcare systems within prisons is even far more overstretched and has fewer resources, right?
Yeah, there are 47,000 prisoners and there are 4 ventilators, and their access to medical care in the infirmary is very limited. So
I imagine testing is a similar situation. The U.S. public is not having easy access to testing unless you're rich and famous. If a prisoner is showing symptoms and asks for a coronavirus test, chances are they're not going to get one.
It seems very likely they are not going to get them.
So, Noelle, in terms of what you're seeing happening inside prisons, you mentioned that you've got correspondents around the country. What are inmates saying? I know that on Prison Radio, you've put up at least one commentary from an inmate who is talking about this. How can we amplify the voice of inmates right now and hear from them directly?
I think every single journalist has to make that happen. They have to talk to people in prison. So that has to be a requirement for doing the story about prisons, has to be that they talk to someone, because it's possible. Also, Pennsylvania just started having video interviews because they're not having in-person interviews. You can sign up for a video interview with a Pennsylvania inmate. We need to prioritize hearing from the people that this affects directly. That includes prisoners. So every journalist is not doing a good enough job unless they talk directly to prisoners. And I think that's imperative in terms of people who aren't journalists. They need to just communicate with prisoners. That's by email if they have it, by phone, writing, just keep up the level of dialogue and communication, reach out to prisoners, because the virus isn't respecting the wall. So I think we need to absolutely have as much contact with our loved ones inside as possible and our correspondents.
And, you know, as I said, the Senate is currently debating this bill, this $2 trillion economic relief bill that would give potentially, and it looks increasingly likely, every American adult $1,200 and for every child $500. I don't know if they're including prisoners in that. Do you?
I don't.
And it's very likely that they're not, given how our society has written off prisoners in general. And so the what in terms of, you know, if cities and states were to start releasing prisoners, we know that a pre-existing problem has been that when inmates are released, there are just not enough support structures for them to return to normal life. I imagine that they are likely to face unemployment. They're likely to face all of those same challenges that they would ordinarily face, except now there's an economy that's even more broken.
I think people have families and communities. They've developed levels of sustenance, whether inside, like everyone that I know inside, and there might be that because they're incredibly gregarious, but like one of my clients who did the commentary, Dennis Solomakeithan, he has 8 brothers and sisters. So he has a really deep family that it would welcome him home. So I think that a lot of people have connections. It's just a matter of we need to release them. And then we need to help them, you know, and we're all going to be devastated economically. This country is going through a vast reorganization economically. There have been so many people laid off. So we have to come together as communities, provide that support, and prioritize what's important and necessary, food, housing, and building of the communities.
Is prisonradio.com the best place where people can find out about the work that you do? And are there resources that they could help out with as you do your work and working with prisoners?
We have a great e-blast, and so they can get it by emailing info@prisonradio.org and going to our Facebook page and looking for it. So our website doesn't have our blog listed, but you can go to the website, just sign up, you'll get the e-blasts. Usually we send out very detailed lists with links. So we have 2 or 3 of these COVID-19 in prison e-blasts that really go into detail about what people can do and what people are doing. So we can send those resources out to people. And we have 5,500 people on our email list, and we keep trying to grow that so that people have the resources.
We'll post a link to that from our website later today. Noelle, thank you so much for the work you do and for joining us today.
All right. Good night.
My guest has been Noelle Hanrahan, Director of Prison Radio. We've been discussing how inmate populations across the U.S. are deeply vulnerable to the coronavirus pandemic. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.